Where are we going? Welcome to this exclusive podcast produced by Spirit Watch Ministries that will show where life in our darkening times is now turning and how you can avoid the detours of deception through the hope of biblical truth. The Lord Jesus in Matthew 24 warned us over 2 millennia ago and how urgently we need to heed him now. Our host is Pastor Rafael Martinez, a seasoned Northwest Indiana-based minister, intercessor, and counter-cult apologist who will help you discern the journey of change we're all on as the last day of the last days now winds down. For more information, check out our Facebook page and our website at spiritwatch.org. Now, here's Pastor Rafael.
Thank you for downloading. This is Rafael Martinez, a minister in the Church of God Cleveland Movement, and I'm the director of Spirit Watch Ministries, an outreach of Christian discernment since 1993, now based in Hammond, Indiana. This podcast is called Where Are We Going? And it's our ongoing exploration of the depths of depravity found in our fallen world today, manifesting through religiously and psychologically abusive cultism. Part of the recovery from cultism is a return back to that which was lost to it. And we make no apology for upholding this simple principle. Shattered faith can be rebuilt, but must be understood for what it is and what it does to those it grievously wounds. Over the years, we've used research, interviews, and conversations with those who are directly impacted by cults to give our podcast the unique voices they have. Our podcasting, therefore, enables us to gain a Christian perspective as well into some very dark worlds of authoritarian spiritual and social slavery, for which, we hold, the light of Jesus Christ alone can guide the way out to true freedom, true peace, and true purpose. His imminent return to this world of woe is heralded by the rise of the slickest of deceptions as he warned his disciples in Matthew chapter 24 in the New Testament. We are only doing as he's commanded there, charging that you take heed that no man deceive you. Our podcast today continues with a series of interviews we had with Michael S. Black, formerly Michael Shamblin, the son of the late cult leader Gwen Shamblin Lara, who was the founder of the Way Down Workshop and the self-appointed leader and prophet of the Remnant Fellowship Church of Franklin, Tennessee. We've said from day one of our ministry that we have no interest in contributing to the last days of deception now at hand, and we've always preached, published, and defended biblical Christian truth and perspective that shows it for what it is. Our podcast today now continues with a perspective on the abuses and outrages that this movement has committed in the name of God, which were highlighted in the HBO Max docuseries, The Way Down, that our ministry helped to launch in 2021, the same year Gwen met her maker and stood before the judgment seat of Christ himself. We're thankful for Michael's contributions today.
You know, so we saw that Natasha was, you know, fighting, trying to make it very clear to the courts that, you know, this was an unstable environment for this girl. And she was fighting to keep custody. She's a more stable parent, and obviously, and, she's contrasting everything with look how crazy that Remnant lifestyle is. Look at everything that's going on. Look right at Joe's lifestyle, the financial troubles. You know, Gwen, and I really could see that Gwen is in these meetings and she's talking to attorneys and she wants 100% of the estate. And I mean 100%. If she had her way, she would have left him with nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's just, it's unthinkable to me for them to be married for 40 years. He's getting on up there. And for her to do that to somebody, first of all, just to do that to anybody, She didn't care.
I was concerned.
She was cruel. She was so cruel. She would have left David Shamblin with absolutely nothing on the street after 40 years of marriage. He had never had an affair on her, which she couldn't say the same. No, he never drank. He never did drugs. She wanted 100% of the estate. He had never hit her. He wanted 100% of the estate. I'm in meetings hearing this. I'm not saying anything. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. Wow.
And just to see that was her mindset. She really thought she was going to get that too.
Yeah, of course. Of course, because she was always the innocent party. She's always the one that was so misunderstood. And that's how your mother always carried herself. And no one was getting what she was saying. She was just this blonde that loved God among other things as well. And she just really played that victim card so well. And this was just a campaign that was going on there. Now, this meeting you're talking about, that in which women were, no men were allowed, women were, but was this the one in July that was in which the announcement came out that she was going to be divorcing him, or was this a different meeting?
I think this was, it was around the same time.
Okay.
I think it may have even been within a few days of that meeting. It was Gwen, you know, she was, he was testing the idea out of divorcing David, but she did it in front of all the women first.
Okay. Got
before
you.
Before she did it in front of the church. And I mean, what does that tell you too?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of backs up my theory, but I think she's testing it out on the women, because I think that's who really could impact the place. Somebody who was actually there, I was not invited to this, of course. All women.
Right.
Like not even Ted or Joe or Joseph Langston or anybody, nobody. Just women. And they had women running the cameras and stuff. But somebody there sent me some kind of rough notes later on.
Okay.
But it was, they only sent me of what Elizabeth had said. But it was a look, because that's what I said. She voluntarily got up there, and it's shocking. And it may not surprise people now, but just how she was speaking.
Yeah.
And just getting up there and lifting up Gwen, and she was comparing, you know, I think Gwen to Erasmus, which that was kind of Remnant's story, the painting story. Gwen had been teaching like in Remnant. She had a painting in her house, I believe. And he was like the pure version of Christianity in her mind.
Erasmus,
around the time of Martin Luther. And
right.
And so he was.
He was one of the reformers. Right.
Yes, that's right. One of the reformers. And in her painting, you know, it's like she had a painting where it's Erasmus, and it's like Luther, and I think it's Calvin. And they're like looking at Erasmus, and Erasmus is looking down at the scriptures, like they're arguing or something. And her big point always was, oh, look, he's looking at the scripture, and they're looking at him, you know. So Elizabeth gets up and talks about, you know, David is like Luther or something, and Gwen was Erasmus or something like that. And but they're basically just, you could tell from the way they're talking, like if something had happened to him, she wouldn't have been sad. This is our father. They would have been cheering. And that's when I realized I don't think people understand that if David had died, they would have been cheering.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I think people think I'm like saying that like a phrase or something. Like it's, I mean it literally. Like that's, I think that's the difference in me and a lot of people that have a casual look at Remnant.
Right.
They wanted physical death on the enemies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They would have been cheering. It would have been Abigail and Nabal or whatever, and David Pat dying, Gwen wanted him to die and to free her up. David was just a problem. You know, and in my estimation, David was the only thing keeping this place, her, somewhat together.
Stable.
Yeah, he was a stable part of her life. She took so much from him. It was ridiculous. So much information from him, copied everything he said and then turned into a sermon. Yeah. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. In essence, you know, David really, the headship, the marital headship that I think your mother at one time may have tacitly acknowledged that it existed, with your father being in Church of Christ circles as they were, that was the one thing that provided for her legitimacy. It provided for her a certain amount of authority to be able to be able to speak as she did. But like you said, I think you're absolutely right. That's a really good point of how much the legacy or the image or the background or the shadow, the deep church, shall we say, side of things, that was what was providing for her whatever backbone and legitimacy she could exert over other people there.
Mm-hmm.
Your father's marriage, and then suddenly she's done with it now. Now she's moving it, and she may have been Gigi, but she's a very calculating one as well, knowing that you just mentioned that she played this in Peoria first to make sure that Hollywood would take it as well.
Mm. Right.
Yeah. Wow. Incredible. And so I'm sure that impacted, as everyone we've already mentioned, deeply. We want, and especially the Beulahs, those women who were so, chained to her and who were her complete loyalists, that actually had been an absolute devastation to them. And then with the changing doctrines, that made it even worse. And then that new directive you mentioned, it was a shocking reversal of what's known as remnant law. You know, remnants, unique traditions and directives. You said, so now it's permissible to divorce to be allowed in circumstances.
But I want to be clear too. Like, I may not fully agree. Like, I know you're saying it was, what's the wording you just used? It was just devastating to the Beulah.
I'm not going to say necessarily devastating in that they just so emotionally pained. I think they were all behind it and cheered a lot of it. But there's some of them that
it clearly was devastating to some of them, I guess.
Right, exactly.
I mean the shift. It flipped the script on everything. You know, I mean, they had been for so many, you know, for so long. They're stuck in a box. They felt like with the marriage and the permanence of things, and then they had been told to submit, right? But
right,
they also had a way around to work around that, in my opinion. But now they've got a way out, and
right,
I think they're feeling it was destabilizing to them, but I think it was liberating to them.
Right, exactly,
and that's, I think that's maybe the difference. It's not just, I think it was the threat of divorce. Now it's like leverage, you know. It's like now it's like a bargaining chip they've got,
right?
And I don't know. I don't know. I just, that was something that really, it messed over a lot of stuff. But
oh, sure, right.
It was a fragile authority structure,
right,
already, and now it's. It's just now it's built on somebody's shifting emotions. And that's what, to exactly. That's what really hit to me in full gear, the women's church. You know, this may sound sexist or whatever. I don't care what people think. I've said stuff like that before, and women may hate me, but like, to me, it was an emotional church. It was like, it changes day by day, right? It's a shifting interpretation. It's whatever Gwen wants, whenever she wants it.
Right.
And now it's whenever a woman is unhappy with her husband, it's like divorce is on the line. Like, because you know Renet's going to support it. All she has to do is go through their very well-oiled machine. It was the divorce machine. I called it the divorce machine. And it was the divorce machine of the remnant. And they will put her together with somebody. There is another man waiting, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
They always had that.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody now in submission to their husband, they've got a weapon of resistance now.
Right.
Gwen has armed these women.
Right. It's up to them where they wanted to use it. Now, I guess a more accurate thing perhaps to say is that it devastated the Beulahs, but for different ways,
right,
like you mentioned.
I think some of that may have just been the devastation that they'd spent so many years not having that weapon.
Right.
Now they could openly wield it. They spent so many years having to go behind the scenes to do stuff to their husband.
Yeah. And now suddenly it's just delivered to them. You know, they're like 6-year-olds given a loaded 45. You know, there's this incredible power of authority. Do they know how to use it? Will they know how to use it? Are they going to use it? You know, at that point, Gwen just stopped caring whether they use it or not, you know.
But I can tell you one thing. If I didn't know one thing, I know Gwen's going to side with the woman.
Sure.
I always knew that. I had some, you know, it's just kind of some basic tenets of Michael Black philosophy or something. Like I knew if I didn't know about something, I knew that was going to happen.
Right.
And I know she's going to end up being on the side. And look, I was concerned during this period. I was concerned that my ex was about to flip the script on my sinning self, right? If I had overweight in the past, that they're forever going to hold that against me. I had already figured it out. Mm-hmm. She had the upper hand with everything at this horrible point. Because as I say, it's the woman's movement. It's headstrong women. They're running the households, and they're running the men who need spiritual guidance. We've already talked about that so many times. The men need the spiritual guidance. The women are leading them. Mm-hmm. She was going along on these trips. The stuff that started happening with Gwen and Joe, they started having the leadership. You know, I don't know if I even mentioned that, but like the leadership, you know, putting them together.
Right.
That was, look, I mean,
there was a culture there. She's looking
up. He's a B movie actor. He's a wannabe country music guy. And you know, he's really popular, and there's instantaneous decisions, right? They're made by the women leaders with Gwen knowing that he's off limits to the other women. And, you know, this is a total answer to years of Gwen's prayers, right? Mm. And the machine's kicking into gear. They're doing what they do best. They're going to attack David Shamblin. They're going to erase him. And they're going to put her with Joe in their place together. I think everybody started to talk about this on the documentary. And, you know, their place together at the dinners. And by the way, the Days were a big part of that. Tiffany Day was one of the offending people. She's constantly pushing them to sit together and stuff like that. But and I, you know, so there were these early trips where they're putting them together, and like the, you know, the inner top leaders, like the Angers and the Days, they're whining and dining Joe, and they're like secret affairs, and they're letting them stay in the same room, and they're, you know, letting them get away with this stuff. And they were, That's what was going on. They're putting him together.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And it's what Gwen set up. You know, obviously this is something that they were going to back to the hilt, because that was working to their advantage as well. Hey, if you're seeing, you know, lights in the tunnel, they're starting to see change in the wind. Of course, they want to get out. They want to be able to stretch their wings and catch that drift, you know, to go in and get it. And if they want to see a future within Remnant coming up with both of them, they want to be able to play to that. So of course they said nothing.
Right.
Absolutely nothing. And so, you know, it became permissible according to Remnant law in that doctrinal change that came forth that same year, quote, divorce was allowed in circumstances, but it must be for the pure church and not for merely selfish reasons, which was a bunch of a lot of pardon the French with BS. It's just that's pure baloney. Everyone knew what divorce was being allowed for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Suddenly, Remnant Fellowship was reminded that the official Remnant Fellowship policy never forbade divorces at all. Mm-hmm. And so within a few months, divorce lawyers began making a living off of Remnant couples. I know of several different shakings of unions, shall we say, that would never have taken place the year before had this never happened. Mm. And so by the fall of 2018, Quinn had completely rewritten Remnant's entire social structure, as we mentioned. And one just key thing to look at also as well to remember, in December of that year, Remnant Fellowship had a webcast episode that was devoted to spotlighting the history of Remnant's music. And it never really actually mentioned you once or your work or your contributions to Remnant's existence. Do you remember that one, that broadcast?
I think so. I mean, that was
in December.
Yeah. I want to say, yes, that was I think I do vaguely remember that. And what happened there was it was an episode, was it like a Wednesday night or something? And
something like that, yeah.
They played like the history of Remnant music. And
David Martin was there, of course.
Right, right.
He was not.
Right. And I think what my take on that was, I think it was like Gwen's attempt at, I think she was just playing that kind of thing to judge people's reactions, possibly. Like I think she was possibly testing to see what Remnant was going to be like if I was gone.
Hmm.
Yep. I think it's possible that that's what she was doing. And, I think she hated me as much as Joe did by this point. Mm-hmm. You know, and except I'm in a more tricky situation, you know.
Right, right.
She hated David Shamlin, but he hadn't been around for 17 years. He was never fully a member.
Right.
And he wasn't a part of creating, you know, as much of the Remnant music catalog, right? I'd written two musicals, so everybody was aware of me. I think Gwen, maybe she was in a position where she kind of felt damned either way. Like,
yeah,
if she left me there, I'm gonna eventually have reason to tell the world what I've seen, and you know, and I'll have a lot more information on her moral decline to share with anybody, and if she goes along with letting my ex kind of get rid of me, kind of a la David Shamblin style, right? They get me out that way. Then they know that I'm just going to go scorched earth and blast everybody in some sort of media way because I have nothing to lose. So when they played this music thing, I don't think I was super upset by it. Because I was almost like secretly laughing because it was just insane in my estimation. But, you know, and they've also, keep in mind, also they've got the new security camera that they'd set up that was trained on my face, like 20 feet from my face.
Yeah, so yeah. Right.
I think they're watching every facial reaction I have. So I think they wanted me to blow up publicly. I don't know if that was the intent.
Right.
I think she would have loved me to just make a big scene.
You have a great poker face, David. I'm Michael. You really do.
Yeah. Hey, that's not a problem. You know, hey, I'm honored to be called David. That's great.
All right.
But no, they wanted me to blow up, right? It's by design. It's designed to hurt me.
Yeah.
But it doesn't hurt me. It's designed to cause a reaction, but I've already been doing this for so long. I've been playing this game for so long. I'm not gonna fall for it. So it was just like a big church-wide form of intentional provocation, you know, trying to incite me to do something.
Man. Yep. Yep.
Because they're keeping a record of everything I do.
Right. And by then, Joe and your mother had been married. Joe and Gwen had been married in August of that year, I believe. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, the new order was being formed. So. Maybe he thought he might become a new worship leader. I don't know. He always had that Nashville contract thing he was looking for to try. Maybe that was
right.
One early attempt. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's right. I mean, he was when he came on the scene, and he became part of the whole Remnant show.
Yeah,
he did shift the vibe. And he also, I mean, he liked the spotlight. He didn't look comfortable, but he liked it. And he did like the performance kind of stuff. He was a drummer, and Gwen set him up at the guest house with his, you know, brand new drum set, and he'd play with some of the guys sometimes. And yeah, I think he was kind of real careful about how he was gonna play. He had a real kind of like he wanted to be seen as a professional. And so he wasn't just going to get up there and just start playing drums, you know, on anything.
Right.
So he was very careful about that. But he had the look, and you know, he could play the guitar, and he would sing sometimes, and people just loved, you know, to hear him sing or whatever. And because right, he's you know, the actor now, he's a man of God, and
exactly. He should be able to do something, right?
Yeah, he's part of the entertainment now.
Yeah.
And he's symbolic, you know, basically, because he's, you know, God has sent him to Gwen. It's all kind of, it's almost like they're a living, it's like they're a living soap opera, you know, that they're living this out, and God has brought him into
right,
you know, this scene, and he could fit in. He's an actor. He can fit in.
Right. Exactly. That's what they do. So so from 2019, as 2020 came in, Gwen and Joe decided they're going to put the fun back into dysfunction again. I think that's what you mentioned. You mentioned that.
Fun and dysfunction. That's exactly. Yes.
They put the fun back into dysfunction again. So that's they began funding the creation. And then that shopping around of a couple of reality TV projects that, you know, helped them to be seen as this wacky, fun-loving, spiritual couple who lived large for God. And then you're, of course, on the outside looking in for this. But did this daffy pursuit of their own fantasy enable you to find any opportunities to make a break for it? Or were you still at this point just kind of biding your time?
I would say... yeah, there was an element to that when they were shopping around things to the media. Because people, you know, they're looking for entertainment, right? And I had a feeling, you know, if anything does happen, I mean, there's going to be people looking for some negativity. I mean, that's kind of like putting it lightly for these reality type shows.
Right.
They're going to be looking for the dirty laundry, maybe not initially, but there will come the time. They're going to want somebody. They're going to be looking to see, is something going on? Is somebody upset? And I think that's where my mind was starting to go. Like, I was thinking, if something does happen, I didn't think it was going to happen, but I was like, if it does, then I'm going to play along for a while.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, it's go time for me. Like, you know, Gwen had her go time with David Shamblin all of a sudden. It's going to be my go time. And I'm going to start letting people know the real Gwen.
Right.
Like, sucking them away.
You're still journaling during all this. You're still writing. You're still recording. You're still pondering.
I'm an enemy. This is something of a way to get back at them if something does hit. So there, you know, there's so many things I could have revealed to producers if she had gotten a show like with TLC was one of the big, I think that was the biggest one that was looking. And I mean, I think it would have blown up in her face personally, but I would have been fine with that. but nothing, you know, I don't know that anything really ever was going to work out. You know, she was, I think it would have been interesting to see because, you know, it was like how she would have handled the experience of like a real show on TV. Because, you know, if the objective is to show the good, you know, and the bad, Gwen's only going to want to show the good. You see, you've got that problem.
Right.
And, you know, that I don't know. I think it was going to turn into an issue where it's like she's not going to want to be under authority.
Oh yeah,
right. I mean,
she wanted to be a director's chair.
She's in a world where she calls all the shots,
right?
And I don't really think that's why I kind of in my mind I was like, yeah, I hope this happens, but I didn't think she was going to actually make it in actual media because she's going to have to work with other people. And she couldn't even come close to thinking of herself in like a position of being under somebody, like a media executive or producer.
Right.
That's a joke. I mean, there's no way. She could not fathom somebody being over her. So I don't know if it ever would have happened. She's the most micromanaging person who's ever lived. Like, even like for her own video, every angle of her face is like micromanaged, dictated to the assistants filming her.
Right.
Even the angle of her face. And there wouldn't have been a chance for her to make the kind of edits she was used to doing.
Mm-hmm.
And right. she was not, I remember being in meetings and she spent hours going, how much are they going to let me, you know, edit, you know, how much are they going to let me, you know, come back in there and say, and I think she was at a level of delusion where she fully believed she could control Hollywood executives or producers, you know, in trying to present herself as looking perfect. So
yeah,
that's kind of where I was at on that.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. I was fully intent. Like if something does happen, you know, I'm going to use it. And I also was well aware that a lot of these shows, they end up having like spinoffs or something like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, because I was going to say, use it if they do get publicly famous, then I'm just going to use that.
Yeah.
To make a break.
Yeah. Well, it was ongoing from 2019 into 2020 when the Unreal happened and COVID-19 swept the world. They were still doing that. They're still pushing their own. At that point, I think the TLC angle had pretty much died down, but they were still pursuing their own remnant-based type. I think it was the Gwen and Joe, Life with Gwen and Joe or something
right,
like that.
Right, right.
That's what was going on. That's what was going on into 2020, even as the whole world began to shut down. And so when that happened, obviously it's not going to impact her aspirations for you know, reality TV glamdom, but certainly it had an impact on Remnant as well. I had to slow things up considerably.
Mm-hmm.
What was in at that point, you know, you're already starting to, again, you're already making inclinations. You wanted to get out. You definitely wanted to get away as much as you could. But when COVID happened, how did it impact your direction then? I think you were still seeking a way out, but I was also impacting the church as well. I mean, just seeing what she did, frolicking with people unmasked, just an unthinkable dynamic. But what was your response to all that?
Well, COVID, I know that's one of those issues. It's like, can bring up some strong emotions in different people, but Remnant, I'll try to say this, you know, Remnant was, they were not trying to get anywhere close to looking like some church that's taking a hard stance on something like publicly.
Right.
You know, either way, you know, the vaccine or whatever you want to talk about, but you know, Gwen did kind of start out that way. Talking against it, and she ended up being seriously humiliated by my father-in-law, actually, my ex's father, at a big fancy dinner at Ashland. She had them over for dinner. It was just her and us and the Martins. And then my ex, you know, my father and mother-in-law, and he had been working in a really high up position with ARC, which is American Retirement Company. And he had personally seen lots of damage from COVID-19 and like lots, like they had daily meetings, like updates from government. So, I mean, Gwen's sitting at the table. Like she said something like, it's just like a common cold or something. And David Martin, of course, like backs her up. It was so awful. And so then my father-in-law, he lays into her with facts. And she is so humiliated. And I think that kind of changed her a little bit. Those were kind of the common things I would see happen. But Remnant Large didn't get to see those situations. But
right.
So Remnant kind of backs off their stance. And then later on, they switch around to, I think after the plane crash, I mean, they go, they're like, then they're just like complete 180. And they're just like, whatever the CDC says, you know, we recommend.
Right. That's when the conciliatory meeting I think I had with, I can't remember what the physician's name was who had joined Remnant, and he's now left, I understand.
Yeah,
Dr. Rickman. They had him on a show where he discussed that.
Yeah, Dr. Rickman, and he's left, and I'm not going to say anything negative about, I mean, he has done what he needed to do. He's been by the book, and
right.
So, Remnant was, Remnant was kind of, you know, they started changing their ways, and that kind of ends up, you know, being in the Elizabeth phase of things. They're trying to like normalize, right, being accepted by the local community. But I think though initially though when Gwen and Joe were still there, it was Joe, you know, to keep in mind, this kind of brings up another element of him. He was a big conspiracy theorist type person. Like major conspiracy theorists. And like literally every time we met, he's like looking into something else. Like he really, I mean, I don't mean like, he's like believes that he's into everything.
Uh-huh.
Like everything. He was really out there too on some of that stuff. Like he, like one of the ones we end up talking, he believed the UN, the United Nations, is going to arrest everybody. And they're building holding jail pens, and they're all along I-10, like in Florida, you know, the interstate. He said they're all these secret jails and pens that are along I-10.
Oh, yeah.
And they have them, and they're all these trucks back there ready to go in the UN. I mean, I would hear stuff like this, and Joe Laura talking to his friends about that. I'm like, really? Really? Like, there's not, you know, everybody is driving down the interstate doesn't see this, and... You know, but that he was a part of kind of making Remnant kind of even more crazy, to be honest. And, but Gwen was the Gwen. Gwen, as far as I'm sorry, what?
I'm sorry, I meant to ask. Did he help introduce the conspiratorial theories more there in the Remnant?
Yes, yes, and then also Gwen gets to experience all
that too as well. Okay.
So and then, but keep in mind for COVID too. You know, this is the women's movement take on COVID, right? Gwen, she didn't want to let anybody be seen wearing a mask in the sanctuary during COVID.
Right. Right.
Camera. But I promise you, and you're not going to believe me, it's because of appearance. Uh-huh. It had nothing to do with health.
Right.
People may think I'm crazy, but I'm not. It's all about appearances. It's all about size. It is the women's movement. They didn't care about health. They didn't care about COVID. It was ruining like her perfect Pollyanna looking, perfect Remnant picture of a church, happy, smiling people. And you can't see them smiling with the mask on. And they need to be dressed in white and khaki. I mean, she was that demented. She's not thinking about people's sicknesses. She's not thinking about people's health. She's looking its appearance.
Right.
Looks trump everything else. Appearance trumps everything else. I mean, look at how the women started trying to look, you know, I'll give you an example why she did. It's not health. It's not how somebody feels. Look how the women started trying to dress up and wear makeup like right after giving birth. That was like a Remnant phenomenon. I'm sure it's happened before, but I mean, they were trying to outdo each other. Like putting on their makeup and getting in a photo with their husband and everybody while they're laying in the bed. You know, they'd just given birth like an hour before.
Yep.
And they're smiling and they've got their hair. Somebody does their hair for them. And they're like posting that on, you know, social media. They're trying to outdo each other with that. Like, look, I'm not affected at all. I just gave birth and I look perfect. That's it. That so Remnant, yeah. it had nothing to do with science. You know, that was, it was just, it was a distraction. It was a nuisance for Gwen. It was a hiccup within this church. You know, it's, and anyone, there actually were people in the church that got COVID, and there were some very serious cases I actually ended up hearing about. Like a couple of people almost died, but they were never talked about. They were put down, not talked about. Because once again, though, that also could factor into curses of remnant. Somebody,
right, died. Right.
So nobody would be allowed to talk about anything negative. Right. But that was remnant. That's par for the course of remnant anyway. You can't talk about something terrible happening. People have died. People have committed suicide in remnant. Nobody knew about it. You can't talk. They don't talk about it. They cover it over.
But it happens. There are suicides there. There are people with mental health problems. There are people with special needs children. There are people who have kids that astray and run amok. But those are all the unfortunate real sides of life which aren't allowed to pop their heads up in remnant because that's the way it is in a perfect place like remnant.
Right.
Yep.
And as far as like did this change? I think you mentioned like did this change anything with me? No. I mean, I'm still going to proceed with the plan to leave. I'm still going to do it, you know, and I'm still going to keep doing the journal. And I'm looking at it all. It's a massive cursed cult, you know, it's got a dramatic flair though. And I think this whole thing had taken a worse tone. Joe Lahr coming in and you've got COVID, all of the things happening. I'm seeing women openly allowed now to go ditch their husbands. The attorneys love that. They're busy. Yeah.
I'm sure they had quite a good time there, those couple of years, last couple of years there.
But I'm still, no matter what, through it all, I'm treated like a person of interest. From security, I'm overhearing them say things. They're calling me, you know, the code word Falcon. I hear that in one of the meetings accidentally. I walk in and they say it in front of me. Then they all like look freaking embarrassed because that was a code word. And then I hear later, you know, they label Falcon as somebody. It's a category of a threat level. And I was a potential threat. They weren't Gwen and Joe. They weren't ignoring me. I'm sorry. There's a mower outside right now. if you can hear it. They weren't ignoring me. But they didn't quite completely know how to deal with me.
Right.
And Gwen is, she's kind of having more issues now being the moral authority, the high ground at this point, but she's still trying to act the same.
Right.
And she's cold. She's above everyone still.
Right.
You know, but we, you know, both of us, we all kind of knew this point. I'm just going to wait for the right moment.
Right.
And when she's at, I'm going to wait to the moment when she's at her morally lowest to say, see, I knew you were faking it all. And at some point I'm going to, you know, maybe make a run for getting my own part story out or something like that.
Right.
That's where I was. And that's where we were.
Thanks for listening today as we explore just where are we going. Our prayer is that you have been encouraged and strengthened and, if necessary, challenged in your daily journey through life. Jesus is coming. You can fall with the night or you can rise with the sun. The choice is yours. You can email us with questions and comments at feedback@spiritwatch.org. And if you need urgent personal spiritual help, email us at help@spiritwatch.org. We look forward to hearing from you. Please follow our podcasting at our Facebook page and our website at spiritwatch.org. This podcast is a production of Spirit Watch Ministries, taking heed that no man deceives you.
My father used to have a saying, God sees the truth, but waits.